I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of this meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 7 reports from management. We've received an apology from Councillor Ong. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest, as defined in the Local Government Act 1989, in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of Open Meeting Number 83, held on the 16th of June 2016, and Meeting Number 84 on the 21st of June? Thank you. Deputy Lord Mayor, Councillor Foster, thank you. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, that is unanimous. Thank you. Any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meetings? As at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.1, Draft Amendment C258, Heritage Policies Review, requests to speak from Paul McSweeney, Ewan Ogilvie, Felicity Watson, Mary Kehoe and Katrina Grant, and items of correspondence from Lorna Hannon, Susan Balderston, Paul McSweeney, Ewan Ogilvie, Felicity Watson, Mary Kehoe, Katrina Grant. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, City of Melbourne's submission on the Fisherman's Bend recast vision, a request to speak from Chris Thrum, and an item of correspondence from Chris Thrum. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, Melbourne Metro Rail Project, City of Melbourne's submission to the Environmental Effects Statement, requests to speak from Matthew Hammond and Adam Murchie, and an item of correspondence from Matthew Hammond. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Planning Permit Application TP 2015906, 88 Park Street, requests to speak from George Nedovich, Jennifer McDonald and Mark Annabelle, and items of correspondence from George Nedovich, Lucas Annabelle, Mark Annabelle and Marcus Hoare. In relation to Agenda Item 6.5, Planning Permit Application TP 2015570, 121-131 Collin Street, a request to speak from Megan Evans and an item of correspondence from Megan Evans. In relation to Agenda Item 6.6, Ministerial Referral TPM 201526, Partial Demolition and Construction of Misused Tower and Use of the Land for a Childcare Centre, 640 Bourke Street, Melbourne, a request to speak from Katrina Grant. Items of correspondence from Frank Tong and Alison Hoskin and Katrina Grant. In relation to Agenda Item 6.7, Planning Application TP 201653, 22 White Hart Lane, 359363 Lonsdale Street, requests to speak from Stephen Johnson and Shane Link. Items of correspondence from Stephen Johnson and Shane Link. Anybody here who'd like to address us whose name I've not read out? Thank you. That is the first time in my life I've been asked to be louder, but I'm delighted to be asked. Thank you. it may be I'm just not speaking into the microphone properly. I beg your pardon. Could I advise submitters that you'll be invited to address the committee at the time the relevant agenda item is considered? You have 3 minutes to address the committee. We stick to that 3-minute time limit. There is a counter on the wall behind us. Beeps sound at the completion of 2 minutes, signalling there is 1 minute remaining. Another beep will sound that signals the time allocated to you has finished. In accordance with the Council Resolution of 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and the end of the meeting for members of the public to ask us questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. This is not the time to make submissions. It is a question time. If you are a submitter, you can be invited to address us at the time the relevant agenda item is considered. Would anyone like to ask us a question? Yes.
Mr. Mayor and councillors, my name's Joe Edmonds from Parkville. Last night, the lemon-scented gum, the 94-year-old National Trust registered tree, was attacked again by VicRoads. It's been reduced by a further 25%. We've had a report from our arborist, who's at the Royal Botanic Gardens, that the tree is still viable and that it should be given every chance to regenerate, and it's good at that. So we ask the question, in view of this, will the Lord Mayor now act and make urgent representations to the Acting Minister for Roads, Jacinta Allan, in the absence of the Minister, and to VicRoads to save this tree from extinction, it being, according to Council's urban forest strategy, one of Melbourne's most favourite trees?
Can I make the point? Please remain. Can I make the point that we have done that? We had VicRoads, including their CEO, in this very room where we asked that very same question. We were told as a whole council that this was not a matter for our decision, that VicRoads had made their decision with ministerial approval and that it would proceed. Can I make one further assurance to you? And, you know, far be it from me to praise or otherwise my colleagues, but in particular, Councillor Rohan Leppert has been absolutely assiduous in pursuing this issue in every single forum he possibly can, aided by Councillor Wood and also Councillor Oak. But I'd point out Councillor Leppert has taken the lead on that, particularly with residents. I don't think that Councillor Leppert has left a stone unturned. We asked that question directly. We were told that VicRoads would proceed and they did not need any permission from us, and that they would proceed.
Mr. Mayor, Lord Mayor, you've known that the Tullamarine widening works have been on for months.
This is for questions. Yes. So you can ask me a question, by
yes, I'm asking you a question.
Well, no, you're making statements. Please, ask me a question.
We want you to make further representations. The public representation on this issue is enormous, and it's largely...
What is your question of me?
My question is, will you make further representations? Do you not realise that you're perhaps the most influential person in Melbourne to speak on the issue to the government? Will you speak to them again and get them to defer the issue, and let's have a full examination of what's transpired in this case?
Can I make a comment? Yes, I will. If you would like me to do that, then yes, I will. I will be informed. I'll be informed by Councillor Leppert, and I will take him with me, if I may, if we're to be seen in person, or I'll have him with me as I'm making those representations, because he has really been the champion of this tree. So, yes, I will. I will do it in the most heartfelt way. I believe in your cause, but here's the one thing I do not want to offer you. I believe I've already made those as hard as we can. I don't know that we will be successful, and I cannot promise you that. And I don't want to hold out false hope to you and have people disappointed that I'm unable to deliver a result. Will I do it in the most heartfelt way I can with Councillor Leppert? Yes, I will. And if I may, I will report back to you directly on the result of that plea.
Do you understand that it's a very urgent matter? That if they're going to come in the
middle... Oh, I know I have to do it tomorrow morning.
They're going?
Don't worry. I know I have to do it tomorrow morning.
All right. Good. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I don't know that the minister would take my phone call tonight, but I make you the undertaking that I will do it with Councillor Leppert, that I will do it as a matter of urgency. I will see if I can have my staff, who are listening assiduously, book me that phone call with the minister first thing, and we will have your contact details. I will let you know the response to that as soon as I've made it. But I want to say this to you. I don't want you to think that we haven't done that in the most stringent terms possible, particularly through Councillors Wood, Oak and Leppert. I do not hold out much hope of success, but I will make it as heartfelt as I can with the science of our arborists behind it as well.
Thank you.
Is there a further question for us? Yes.
Lord Mayor and councillors, my question also is about the lemon-scented gum, but in the view of the fact that Melbourne City Council has got a fine reputation, and you know it, with the Melbourne Bio Blitz that is done in conjunction with Melbourne Museum, and we would like to see that the tradition of what you've done with the Melbourne Bio Blitz, which celebrates the biodiversity of the city of Melbourne.
You need to ask us a question. I'm sorry, it's not
I want to ask you, why is there such a contradiction between the strength of your backing of the Melbourne Bio Blitz and allowing the destruction of the of many, not just this one, but many of our mature trees along the freeway, and forever there is development, seems to go alongside the destruction of native environment. So why the contradiction, Lord Mayor, please?
Can I make one point? I do take a bit of exception to the term allowing. Right. We don't allow. We actually protest every time, almost tree by tree. But if we don't have the power, if that power rests with the state government, to be honest, it's to them you should be taking your concerns. We actually voice your concerns to them and have done so, and I've just promised to do it again. But to say that we allow it is really a bit disingenuous, to be honest. We don't allow it.
All right, I apologise for my use of words. I'm sorry, I'm a bit nervous. What I'm saying is that we would be very much appreciative if you can back your wonderful reputation of the BioBlitz and the collection of data of how healthy our wonderful city of Melbourne is with backing the citizens of Melbourne who want to keep that infrastructure that's made us such a good influence with that.
Well, it's the most livable city for 5 years in a row. Can I promise you we will do that? The next major debate that we will undertake is with the Melbourne Metro Rail Authority, where it's proposed that something like 475 trees may have to be removed. Now, about half of those are juveniles that can be easily replaced. About 10% are trees at the end of the life where we are already planning for their replacement. But we will need, again, tree by tree, to work with that authority to minimise that disruption, and we will.
Thank you. And if I may indulge with just one more question.
Of course
Will you replace that tree with at least 50 juvenile trees? Because if you saw the size of that canopy that is at the moment full of flowers and full of wildlife, that tree canopy size cannot be replaced by one tree.
No,
it will
agreed.
Need at least 50.
No, we will take arborist advice on that, Councillor Wood, who's the portfolio.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. The Urban Forest Strategy plants 3,000 new trees a year. We replace about 1,500 trees that we lose through it reaching the end of their life, indeed through developments. There's trees under tree protection guidelines and agreements across the city each and every day. So absolutely can guarantee that tree will be replaced by numerous, numerous trees.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further question? Thank you.
So I'm Robin Laurie, Parkville resident, woken up at 2 a.m. this morning by chainsaws. Our advice is the EPA said that they're not allowed to use chainsaws before 7 a.m. Are you in a position to support the residents in having the rules enforced about noise? There was no advice given to us about it.
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know what our powers are in relation to a major project for which there are special rules. I wouldn't want that in my neighbourhood, I must say. Can I take that on notice and just find what our powers are? There are special legislative powers that allow these major projects to act in ways that are outside the normal ambit of the bylaws that we control. But if they are within our bylaws, we would be looking to enforce them. And I agree with you, it's not appropriate that you're woken up at some ridiculous hour by chainsaws.
And there must be they must be advising residents that they're going to make that noise.
Regrettably, under what are quite draconian state major project powers, My understanding is no, they don't need to. That they can simply proceed. They give notice of what they need to do and then they proceed to do it. But I don't want to give you sort of legislative or quasi-legal advice now. May I take that question on notice? Ask our officers to give you a considered answer and then come back to you.
Thanks. It's urgent, as you know. It may be tomorrow morning.
It'll be the second phone call I make tomorrow morning, if that's okay. Thank you. Any further questions for us? In that case, thank you. Could I call on Councillor Leppert to assume the role of Chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor, and thank you for your remarks as well. There are seven reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. Councillor Wong is an apology for this meeting, so I'll be chairing those seven items. The first item is item 6.1, the draft amendment C258, Heritage Policies Review, and I call on Ian Hicks and or Kate Vino to make a presentation, please.
Evening through you, Chair, Lord Mayor, Councillors. As a brief introduction to Amendment C258, which is the Heritage Policies Review, a bit of background about why we are actually here with this Heritage Policies Review. The project itself was initiated through the Heritage Strategy of the City. There also has been driven by the fact that we are one of the few municipalities that are currently working to the old heritage system, and we need, as a matter of importance, to upgrade that to the new system. And in recent times, through the Planning Panels Victoria and also through the State Government Practice Note, there is a need for us to move relatively swiftly to the new contemporary heritage system. The process that we've been through, councillors, is up on the screen, but essentially this process began in 2014. We've moved through two stages of consultation so far to get us to the point where we are at the bottom of that diagram, which is to currently have a draft amendment before you tonight. And I will talk to in the next slide what the next stages of this process would look like should you adopt the draft amendment tonight. An important comment that I just wanted to make is about what this is and what this isn't, what C258 is and isn't. As I mentioned before, this is about a translation from a current system to a new contemporary heritage system, which has involved a series of steps which I'll talk to in a minute. What this amendment isn't is a place-by-place or review of the heritage significance of individual buildings or places. That has not been done as part of this translation. It has in part been done at a desktop exercise to verify some criteria that the consultants have used when translating from a building from an old system to a new system. That's the right slide. There are three key important parts of this policy, and in looking at this slide, councillors, I do want to make one initial point. There is no one part of this policy, that is, the statements of significance, the policy itself, or the new system of grading, that can be read in isolation to each other. To do that is to not read the policy suite properly, and they need to be read in conjunction. So what has occurred in this process is some statements of significance have been developed for six existing large-scale heritage overlay precincts. The heritage policy, particularly the clauses that are in the local policy, have been reviewed and revised to provide greater clarity on some issues, an example of that being where it is that solar panels are wanted to be put on a heritage property. There's been some lack of interpretational clarity on such matters, and this review allows for some of that to be better translated. That's just as a way of example. And finally, that you may be familiar with the old A to D grading system of individual places and properties that has now moved to a system of significant and contributory status, which is actually a part of the new system. The statements of significance I refer to, this is a map that illustrates those heritage overlays and the statements of significance. And finally, we've had some submissions come to us, and we have tried to summarise some of our response in the report. But additionally, I just wish to have a slide to summarise that here. In attachments 2 and 4, you'll see a more detailed summary to some of those submissions. But I just want to make a few points. This has been intended at a macro scale, and we're dealing with over 7,000 properties here. This is intended to be a policy-neutral exercise, if you like. It is intended to primarily be a translation. We have neither taken the opportunity to down or upgrade the heritage significance of properties as a part of this. It has purely been an exercise in translating from one system to another. That does, of course, require interpretation, and we don't step away from that. That is very true. But its intent is to be a policy-neutral exercise of translation from an old system to a new system. The other point I'd like to make there, I think the second point I've already made, the other point I'd like to make is about the new system, and that it is our view that the amendment that you have in front of you, moving from the old grading system to the new, retains the protection that is appropriate and equal to that of the previous system. The final point I'd like to make is that we are still only partway through the process. We actually have quite an extensive process in front of us. As officers, we're also very aware that this is a very complex piece of work, not only in the translation exercise, but in terms of the policy suite, never mind the number of properties that are actually involved. As a result of that, you'll see, as the process that's proposed to roll out, should Council adopt this tonight, that as part of the exhibition process, we do intend to do some additional things. We intend to extend the time of public exhibition from a month to 2 months. We intend to actually build into this process a much higher level of technical support to work with the community at a series of community forums to just help better understand what actually the policy and the amendment here is trying to achieve. And that is because this is a very complex process, but also it would allow us to hear from the community about what their concerns are as well during this process. And importantly, as with any panel process, there is an independent adjudicator at the end of this part of the process, at which people have the capacity to make submission on any concerns that they have and anything they wish to say to an independent process that will then come down with an independent panel report. Through your chair, councillors, that's the end of that presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Hicks. Are there any questions for Mr. Hicks at this time? Councillor Watts.
Just a quick one. I'm pleased to understand the process in this way. I'm sure the rest of the community will be too. I know that it's a rigorous document, but it's a document that seems to have the response from some of the informed community are that this document has some mistakes in it. Is there provision before it's exhibited for the mistakes that are, or errors that have been suggested, to be considered before we put a document out for exhibition that could be better? That's what my concern is.
Through your chair, councillors. I'm aware of that, Councillor Watts, as you know. My suggestion would be that, and what we will do is two things. Should Council adopt it tonight, we will proof these documents as far as practicable, particularly with some errors that people believe have been made. We will check those immediately. We will make any corrections to that as necessary. But the second thing I would say is that through the process itself, should any errors or omissions arise as part of the process, then they will no doubt inform the end of this process as well.
Any other questions at this point? No? Thank you, Mr. Hicks. There might be in a minute, not sure, but for now I call on Paul McSweeney, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. And Paul, you've got 3 minutes and the buzzer will sound after two. In fact, Paul, we might just pause for a moment. There might be a few people who would like to leave at this point, and now might be an opportunity. Otherwise, we'll just get going in just a moment. We've all got copies of that, so don't worry about that. Thank you so much, though. When you're ready.
Thank you. Firstly, thank you, Councillor Leppett and management, for the efforts you've made. The intent is really to ensure that there's no weakening of heritage controls. Regrettably, I believe that there will be, and I've given you an example of Leopold Street. If you look at the chart that I've attached, you'll see, firstly, in Leopold Street, there are no A or B properties, but there are 49 C and D properties. That's 70% of the buildings in Leopold Street. They're all primarily level two, which is the second highest streetscape level. In the translation exercise, the description of C and D properties as being significant has been deleted. In addition, even more disturbingly, the streetscape in Leopold Street has been described as not significant. Now, in my view, that's disastrous. We've already been through this with VCAT 10 years ago, and Council supported us, and we won. And Level 2, the only reason we won was because there was a Level 2 streetscape for a degraded cottage. Now, some of you might remember that issue, but VCAT made it clear that it was good heritage practice to review, when reviewing whether or not a building should be demolished, that account should be taken of the streetscape. So it is truly bizarre that in this latest proposed draft amendment, that whereas streetscapes are still regarded as important factors for additions or for new buildings, they're not regarded as a relevant factor for demolitions. I ask you, how can that be? They currently are in clause 2205. Now, I realise that 2205.17 says that other streetscapes may be determined, those that are not currently graded as, or that are graded as not significant, may be considered to determine whether they are significant. But that's too late. That's a cop-out. By the time you get some developer in there, well-resourced, applying to knock the building down, what's the point of having a thing where council is not given an opinion as to how important the streetscape is? It's truly bizarre. I believe that there is a legal opinion that says that there's been no weakening of heritage controls, but I guarantee councillors that if you gave the facts of Leopold Street to that lawyer, there is no way that that lawyer would say, put his hand on his heart and say, there is no weakening of heritage controls. So I regret that it doesn't achieve its objective. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. If you wouldn't mind just staying for a minute, there may be some questions. I've got some questions, but I think they're primarily of Mr. Hicks in the first instance. So if you just perch, that would be great. Mr. McSweeney identified that the streetscape grading is not a factor to be assessed when an application to demolish a heritage building is assessed. My understanding of the new controls that we're, the new policy that we're putting in place here, is that delisted buildings will no longer need to rely on extraneous arguments such as streetscape gradings to survive both the responsible authority and VCAT. Can I ask you, Mr. Hicks, if that's correct, and can you generally respond to that suggestion from Mr. McSweeney, please?
through you, Chair and councillors, yes, that response is correct, Councillor Leppett. We've had a couple of submissions on this point where the submitters have referred to what is known as the gun case some 10 years ago. The thing I would say that complicates that argument is that we are actually moving to a new, different system. So, which gives us back full circle to your point, Councillor Leppett, which is that the C and D buildings do not rely on the streetscape significance which was in the old system in order for their level of protection to be protected. What actually provides the level of protection for those now known as contributory buildings lies in the policy statement itself at 2205 and 2204, where the statements in there, in our view, are stronger for the protection of those buildings than what the previous policy statement was. And some of that, councillors, without going through it word for word, is in represented in 7.2 of your paper, in that table that indicates the movement from the old to the new system and how the definitions and translation in the policy shifts as well, and in our view provides some level of better protection for those C and D buildings in a policy sense. So, Councillor, just to wind that up, this is one of the risks of considering parts of the policy suite in isolation to other, because it needs to be read in combination.
Thank you, Mr Hicks. Can I now call on Ewan Ogilvie on behalf of the Carlton Residents Association to make a submission.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and Councillors. The substance of my submission is covered in a letter to Councillors, and there are really two major issues. The first is we wish to pick up the problem with the errors in the document, and the second part deals with the grading translation exercise. We're concerned that the maps and the inventories still include many, many errors. There are several heritage places included in the draft inventory and all the heritage overlay that have been demolished. Perhaps more importantly, there are several examples of mapping errors where the boundaries of heritage overlays are incorrect. These include adjacent heritage places that are shown to be separated and heritage places that are incorrectly located. We do not understand why the Council did not undertake a comprehensive data matching exercise. We believe that such an exercise would have picked up many of these errors. For example, on the boundary problem, Pelham Street, Rathdown Street and Cardigan Street all have examples of boundary errors. The grading translation exercise has been quite problematic in our view. The officers state that the Heritage Policies Review is not a review of heritage places or precincts. Actually, the consultants, in their own language, have reviewed thousands of C and D graded properties, with over 600 of these properties having a new status in the revised grading system. We find it troubling that this review has been undertaken as a desktop study with minimal field work. Secondly, it is not clear to us why the Council has not adopted the separate thresholds recommended by the State Government. I quote, "The thresholds to be applied in the assessment of significance shall be state significance and local significance." Certainly, clearer advice from the State Government would have been highly desirable. The variety of grading systems adopted by the different municipalities must be a nightmare for the architectural profession. Finally, we do have serious concerns with the use of the word contributory. Since most graded heritage places within a precinct do make an important contribution to a heritage precinct, especially the highly graded places, but they're not called contributory, we think that's quite unhelpful. So we're hoping that the Council will revisit this grading review before the documents are exhibited. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr Ogilvie. Are there questions for Mr Ogilvie? No? I'll ask Ian Hicks another question to follow up, if I could. You mentioned, Ian, at the beginning that this is quite a complicated issue, so I think we need to just get through these issues as quickly as we can. and I understand it's already taking a bit of time, so thank you, colleagues, for your perseverance. There are four issues raised there. One was on nomenclature, so state and local significance. Why are we not following the practice note? Are you able to respond to that?
As best I can, through Chair, councillors, is to say that we are following the practice note. The status of contributory is also part of the state's guidance, although not mentioned by the submitter then. So the state, local and contributory status of buildings is part of the guidance from the state government, and we have applied those in this translation.
Thank you. In terms of the errors and why this was a desktop study and not a holistic study, are you able to respond to that as well, please?
Yeah. Through you, Chair, this project, when established in 2014, was actually a translation of the system itself. We weren't provided the remit and did not take the remit to actually review. The consultants clearly have reviewed existing gradings for the purpose of translating to the new system. What we didn't have the remit to do and was not part of this project was to review the heritage status of a building or a property for the purpose of upgrading its heritage status.
So, for example, if a building has been demolished and there's still a heritage overlay there, it's perfectly fine that the desktop review didn't pick up that the building's gone because it's a policy-neutral translation and obviously the new building's not going to be protected because it's obviously new. So in terms of the practical upshots of, of the new policy, is it going to have any change to the likelihood or otherwise of buildings being demolished?
So using that example, the translation, and in practice, using your example there, no, there wouldn't be any practical implications of that.
Thank you very much. Can we move on now, please? I'll ask Felicity Watson on behalf of the National Trust to make submission. Thank you, Felicity.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to address you tonight. I just want to address this agenda item very broadly on behalf of the National Trust. My name is Felicity Watson. I'm the Senior Community Advocate at the Trust. The National Trust congratulates the City of Melbourne for progressing this much-needed review of the City's heritage policy. The Trust fundamentally supports the revised policies proposed for exhibition, and we look forward to submitting a much more detailed response to the exhibited amendment. In particular, we support Council's proposed guidelines that for places deemed to be of individual significance, the preservation of the entire building is to be reasonably expected, and for contributory places, the retention of the front portion of the building is to be reasonably expected. Clear guidelines regarding the incorporation of significant heritage places into new developments are urgently needed to address the phenomenon of facadism, which comes up time and time again before this committee. This often tokenistic approach to heritage places can have the ironic effect of completely undermining their significance, which was illustrated in the current proposal for 183 to 189 at Beckett Street, which came before this committee 2 weeks ago. We believe that the proposed revision of Melbourne's heritage policies will provide sound guidance for the assessment of planning applications and greater certainty for both residents and developers with regard to protecting significant heritage places and incorporating them into new developments. We strongly urge Council to seek authorisation from the Minister for Planning to exhibit this amendment, and we look forward to providing a detailed response. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Felicity? No, thank you very much. In that case, I call on Mary Kehoe, the Secretary of the Hotham History Projects, to make a submission.
Thank you for the opportunity to present tonight. As you're aware, our Chair, Lorna Hannan, wrote to you last week expressing our concerns that the proposed changes in the draft amendment will not strengthen the protection of our heritage buildings. Lorna is unable to be here tonight as she is unwell. We welcomed the review of the local heritage planning policies because they were long overdue. However, we do not understand why the Council did not follow the State Government practice notes to use state and local significance as the definitions for significance. We share the concerns of other groups about the definition of contributory and the supposed translation of the grading systems across to the new categories. With the dropping of Level 2 and 3 streetscopes, less than 5% of North and West Melbourne streets are now assessed as significant, and more worryingly, 75% of our total historic building stock is now assessed as contributory in non-significant streetscapes. We welcome the proposed consultations with heritage professionals so we can understand more fully this very complex amendment. I just want to talk also about the heritage inventory. We would like to see the new category introduced into the heritage inventory for the first time of non-contributory buildings deleted. It has never been included before, and we cannot see any rationale for its inclusion. We'll also make a rod for your own back because you'd have to keep updating it with all the new buildings that come online. So at the present time, there are over 1,000 ungraded or non-contributory places in the total listing for North Melbourne of 2,500. The worrying thing is that the non-contributory attribution implies that buildings have been assessed as such, and this is patently not the case. Some contributory buildings in the inventory have been assessed as significant or contributory in heritage views still awaiting adoption, and they will eventually be incorporated into the inventory. In the meantime, the non-contributory status is dangerous for any building that ends up at VCAT. We also welcome Councillor Leppett's proposal to request council officers to reformat the inventory into odds and evens when exhibiting the amendment. I just would like to say that the reliance on primarily desktop surveys, in particular the error-ridden iHeritage database, has meant there are errors and anomalies. Obvious errors do need to be rectified, and any measures to take to make the inventory easier to use will surely be welcome to all those who use it. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thanks so much, Mary. Any questions? Lord Mayor. Sorry, Mayor, if you wouldn't mind just answering one question we got from the Lord Mayor. Thank you.
It's not for Mary, it's for our officers. We've now had two submitters say that we have not followed the State Government's practice notes. My hearing of Ian was that we have followed the practice notes. Could I have that clarified, please, Ian?
We've since just learned.
No, Mary, it's for Ian.
Yes, Lord Mayor, that we have.
Thank you.
And apologies, Mayor, I did ask you to return, but the question was for Mr Hicks, so I'm sorry about that. Can I call on Katrina Grant on behalf of Melbourne Heritage Action to make a submission, please? Thank you.
Thanks for this opportunity to speak about this. Like the National Trust, Melbourne Heritage Action supports this review, and we applaud the Council's efforts in bringing this policy review about. The current guidelines, as we know, are far too vague and have not been sufficient to protect many significant heritage places. The proposal for the Grange Lynn site, which was discussed 2 weeks ago, was a great example of inappropriate development, as is the proposed one for the Eliza Tinsley building, which is on the agenda for later this evening. We support the shift from the ABCD gradings to significant and contributory, and we agree that many C and D rated places will need to be reviewed and not just automatically switched over, but we understand that this will happen as part of the process. We are pleased to see the acknowledgement of historical and social values as part of heritage, and we are also pleased to see that proposals regarding the development and redevelopment of heritage places will be required to supply much more detailed reports and documentation regarding the impact of new developments on heritage sites. One important point we would like to note, and we look forward to making a more in-depth submission on this later on, is that under the proposed guidelines, under additions, that we would like to see the proposed guidelines strengthened to prevent facadism. We think that they still allow a level of facadism, and we'd like to see the guidelines say that facadism of any kind is a poor and unacceptable outcome for places that have been given heritage protection. That said, I would reiterate that Melbourne Heritage Action is pleased to see this review of heritage guidelines going ahead, and we applaud the Council for taking this important step. Thank you.
Thank you, Katrina. Are there any questions for Katrina? Any other questions just before we start the debate for Mr. Hicks from councillors? No. I'm going to proceed to moving a motion myself at this point. The motion is up on the screen there. It is the recommendation from management plus three changes to the report, and I call on a councillor to second that motion, please. Thank you, Councillor Watts. This is by far one of the most complicated planning scheme amendments and processes that has come before the Council, and we've already been in this meeting for, 46 minutes, and this is the first time we've started a debate. I think now's the time to just get all of these issues on the table, and I'll try and do that as quickly as possible so that we don't hold the meeting up any further. But I do acknowledge from the outset that this is a very, very complicated process and that there is a level of... not confusion, but a lack of confidence from many in the community that the Council has explained very clearly why this is necessary and what the upshot of the Heritage Policies Review is going to be. That's fine, and I acknowledge that. In fact, we were concerned so much about that in December, when this matter was going to come before Council, enough of us expressed concerns that the CEO then pushed this matter back until now to allow that extra period of consultation. It came back 2 weeks ago, and we pushed it back again just to check again that all buildings that were meant to be in the heritage inventory were, and that happened. So there have been two deferrals already, and I'll address why we can't defer this any longer later on in my remarks. But before I do that, I just want to set out why I've made these three changes here. The first one just picks up the suggestion from Carlton residents that we haven't adequately assessed Heritage Overlay Schedule 1 in the proposed new Statement of Significance, which is a remarkable document, by the way. The new suburb-wide Statements of Significance are expansive, the result of extensive consultation, and they pick up a whole lot of things that weren't there previously, and I think they're remarkable documents. The concern is that the non-contiguous part of Heritage Overlay 1 around University Square and the strip of buildings along Grattan Street hasn't been described in that. I think that's probably true, so we need to check that, and that is the reason for part one. Part two is picking up on other submissions. I've checked this with officers, and they can confirm that the removal of non-contributory buildings in the heritage inventory will have no consequence. However, it is an improvement because using the term non-contributory inside the heritage inventory suggests that those buildings have been graded as such when they haven't, and so it is cleaner to just remove them entirely. Officers have supported that position, and I think Mary has made the suggestion that it's a rod for our own back because we're going to have to keep adding to the inventory every time a new building is built, so let's just save ourselves some time and remove them entirely. Part three is reverting to odds and evens, which is what most councils do. It's what we've always done. It makes things a lot easier to navigate, and I think that I've found no opposition to the idea that we should revert back to sorting the inventory in odds and evens. So there are two major lingering concerns that I'm hearing from the community which are serious that we need to address. The first is the suggestion that the policy changes here amounts to the wholesale downgrade of heritage, of a class of heritage buildings, and I believe that that is not the case. I didn't always believe that that was the case, but I'm in a very privileged position here because I have access to our offices, I have access to external advice that I've commissioned, I have time here at Town Hall to meet with objectors time and time again, and I've done that over the last 6 months, and it's been a journey for me. At the beginning, I was not sure of this position, and now I am, but I accept that not everyone is because not everyone has that access that I have the privilege to have. But we've got to remember we're going from a performance-based policy to another performance-based policy. This is not an opportunity to tighten up the heritage policy to the extent that everyone would like it tightened up. It has to be a policy neutral desktop review because we have to update to the new nomenclature before we go and do those comprehensive wholesale reviews. What this does do, though, is it removes those unnecessary and often controversial opportunities for anyone, developers, property owners, objectors, to argue that D equals demolish or A equals never demolish or anything like that. The new nomenclature removes the opportunities in a performance-based policy for some buildings to be dismissed. The onus is now going to be on applicants and the planning officers assessing applications to apply the text of the new policy and to prove that a building is either unworthy of protection and so on. The new demolition subclause of 2204 and 2205, I believe, is an improvement to the status quo for that reason. Again, this is a policy-neutral transfer. We're not upgrading the heritage status of a whole lot of buildings, but over the course of the last few weeks, I'm confident in my mind that we are certainly not creating a situation where the consequence is going to be that some buildings are more likely to be demolished than they were before. The gun case we've tested extensively, and I believe that that is not an example that applies here for the reasons that Mr. Hicks said. We can't read that in isolation. The second major concern is the removal of the gradings of streetscapes, and Mr. Hicks has addressed that again, and the gun case is relevant there as well. We have changed the policy in recent weeks to pick up on a few of those issues there so that planners have the tools available to them to prove that a streetscape is significant when they're assessing alterations or additions to heritage buildings, but streetscape gradings play no consequence to whether or not a building is going to be demolished, and I'm confident that that is the case. Let me just finish by saying that this is urgent. The longer we wait to transfer from an old system, and we are one of the last, if not the last, councils to do this, to the new system, the longer it is for our Hoddle Grid Heritage Review to be able to proceed, for our South Bank Heritage Review to proceed, for our Fisherman's Bend Heritage Review to proceed, for our Guildford Lane and Hardware Lane study, which is basically complete and ready to come back to us, to proceed. The longer we wait to get over to this new system, and the Planning Panels Victoria have told us, stop sending us planning scheme amendments that use the old system, we're going to get to that point where we're just going to say, no, we refuse to assess these anymore, go back to square one. So we can't take yet another planning scheme amendment to them, which uses the A to D gradings. That is just the place that we are in. So we have to make sure that we don't delay this any further, and that is why I'm in the very difficult position, because I hear that there's a large sentiment in the community that still is not 100% clear about what Council's rationale here is, what our intentions are, and what the consequences of the new policy are going to be, that in normal circumstances I would seek another deferral. But in these circumstances, because the matter is urgent and I don't want to risk heritage fabric in South Bank, Hoddle Grid and elsewhere in our urban renewal areas, I do think this is urgent. I note that the National Trust and Melbourne Heritage Action, which work across boundaries, are generally pretty comfortable that we are moving to this contemporary system, and that they think that, I'm paraphrasing, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Katrina and Felicity, that this is an improvement to the status quo. And I note that the residents groups who are working solely inside the City of Melbourne are generally more nervous. I think that's significant, and I think we should observe that as well. I'll save other remarks for the end, but I do urge councillors to acknowledge that this is urgent. And although it's incredibly complicated, the exhibition process extended, the planning panel process where every single one of these issues will be teased out and we can prove or otherwise that we've got it right or wrong, and the two or three more council steps before the final adoption and the ministerial exhibition are plenty of steps to make sure we've got this right, but we can't push this back any further. I call on Councillor Watts to contribute to the debate. Sorry, before that, Lord Mayor asking a question.
I'll ask you a question, please, because 1.2 is new. I love the description of a contemporary system that's been in place since 1998, but never mind. 1.2 is quite new to us given our earlier discussions. My understanding is that will simply expunge from the inventory that's there all of those that are now described as non-contributory. So that will simply disappear.
However, all of those... Yes, that's right. So all of those buildings, however, will... Any building that was in it that is within a heritage overlay precinct... must, even if it's not graded, the replacement building, if the building's to be demolished, for example.
I get that bit. Yeah, no, my question is simply, are we better simply expunging them and I understand the protection that you're suggesting, which is a meaningful one, or are we better simply leaving the buildings in there and removing the description of non-contributory so that it's simply blank there beside it, allowing for the future contingency that they may be brought into one of the other categories?
And we had this discussion as recently as about 5:15, and we landed here as opposed to the other one, but we did actively consider both. Can I just ask for some confirmation from Mr. Hicks?
If you're the mover and you're comfortable that question's been covered, I'm happy to support.
I'm getting lots of nods, and so I'm comfortable, and thank you, Lord Mayor. This is good that we're checking all of these things. Can I call on Councillor Watts?
Yes, I think we are victims of professional mystique here, and no wonder that the community is concerned and alarmed to some extent at the changes. I think we do have to rely on the professional expertise we have here in Council. I am persuaded of the urgency of the matter, and I am persuaded that our officers are seeking the best outcome for this. I am concerned about the repeated deferrals. I sought earlier the assurance from officers that they will incorporate errors or take into account and consider errors that have been proposed in the submissions so far. In my view, it would be not a good thing if our particular document went forward for exhibition with errors that had already been identified. So that I'm persuaded that will be tidied up to the extent it can be. I'm concerned about this non-contributory. It was my understanding that we offered more protection when that discussion. Could I ask a question of the chair? Would you mind explaining again the non-contributory? My understanding that it offered more protection if it was not listed at all. But the discussion has moved on from that.
The term non-contributory buildings in the heritage inventory that are marked as non-contributory. Are there because they are buildings in the heritage overlay.
Right.
However, whether or not they have the word non-contributory next to them or whether or not they're in the heritage overlay has no practical consequence. The heritage policy, as it applies to those buildings when a planning application is lodged to either demolish or to alter that building, the text of the heritage policy applies, and the word non-contributory carries no status. And so the reason for this is that it's actually better to remove it because it looks like it's a lower class of building, and therefore people can argue that it shouldn't be there.
Thank you for that. If I'm confused about this, no doubt people are too. I am pleased to support this motion.
Thank you. Are there other councillors who'd like to contribute to this debate? Councillor Oak.
I would like to contribute by saying that I've learnt a lot, not only tonight, but over the last 6 months as well. I understand that, you know, a lot of concerns have come to us over a period of time, and I would like to acknowledge the extraordinary amount of work that my colleague, Councillor Leppert, has done in interpreting a lot of this and having the discussions and doing the work to make sure that, well, now I am comfortable with our support of this work and of this recommendation. And in explaining the very complicated, yet it's seemingly more simple tonight, process that is happening in the translation from one to another, but acknowledging that because there are multiple documents at play that need to be read together and multiple pages, simplifying it tonight. I thank you, Councillor Leppert, but also over the last 6 months, you've spent a lot of time working with us as well on that work. So I'd like to acknowledge that, acknowledge the work of the officers, because given the amount of work that goes into these documents, like to acknowledge that as well. But I really do hope that all of the community groups and the advocacy groups that have also spent a lot of time on this appreciate the resolution and where this is landed, and that the work that is acknowledged will go on between now and the submission to the panel, and then the work that will then eventually be be able to get underway as a result of this piece of work. And I think that's the most compelling argument tonight for not another deferral, is that we really need to get on with some really significant pieces of heritage. And if we can't because we haven't done this translation work, then that is of real concern. So I think that the errors are being picked up, some of the concern about the nomenclature is being picked up, and simplifying the process, I believe, is being picked up. And I think that, again, I'd like to thank you, Councillor Lefford.
That's very kind. Any other councillor want to make a contribution before I close the debate? No, can I just then say that I've done a little bit of work, but that's nothing compared to the officers. So thank you, Robin, Marie, Ian, Kate, and your entire team. It is enormous, and it's quite impressive. Can I put this motion to the vote? All those in favour, please raise your hand. Thank you. I declare that carried unanimously. That, I'm sure, is going to be by far the longest item on the agenda, and I promise colleagues that we will get through the rest slightly faster, or significantly faster. I'm being held to that, that's good. The next agenda item is agenda item 6.2, the City of Melbourne submission on the Fisherman's Bend recast vision. Would any councillor like a presentation on this matter? No. In that case, I call on Chris Thrum to make a presentation to the committee, please.
Thank you, Chair, Councillor Rohan Leppert, Lord Mayor, men and women of Old Melbourne Town. This is the agenda item 6.2, the City of Melbourne submission for the Fisherman's Bend recast vision. And I want to commend council officers and the management team for all the work that they've put in for this submission. I have some ideas also further to the points that have been made in the submission. I think it's very important that we protect the green corridors of Melbourne. And I think that with Fisherman's Bend, we'll be creating also some green corridors. So it's a tremendous opportunity for further continuance to protect the biodiversity of Melbourne. So that's crucial. And part of that sort of biodiversity is Westgate Park at Fisherman's Bend. It's a tremendous park. And I think this is a tremendous chance for City of Melbourne officers to work with Parks Victoria to help further protect and sort of build on the relationship that the general public have with this park. I think it's vital that we protect that park. With Fisherman's Bend, with so many people coming into Fisherman's Bend, we're going to need a library or maybe a couple of libraries. Alvin Toffler passed away just recently, and he discussed the importance of knowledge being one of the most important resources in the 21st century. So I think that we should have management look at the establishment of like a really good library in the area as well. For public transport, I think we should look at maybe ferry services, taxi ferry services. That could be one mode of transport in the future as the population builds there. In the area too, we should look at enhancing the relationship that the City of Melbourne have with the skateboarding community. Skateboarding is a valid mode of transport. Also too, it's a tremendous opportunity in terms of like the heritage of the colonial era to have the horse-drawn carriages, a special area set up for them as well. And also too, for the high-tech sort of section in Lorimer, the employment section, could be a chance to perhaps build a double infrared astronomical observatory, a great Melbourne telescope. It'll be like a tremendous sort of enhancement to Melbourne's scientific reputation. And in conclusion, I urge councillors to support the tremendous work that the officers have done in regards to this magnificent submission.
Thank you very much, Chris. I'll move the motion. Can I call on a seconder for that motion? Councillor Roke, thank you. I think this is actually, in hindsight, a slightly bland vision compared to the Chris Thrum version, which I think would be wonderful. I particularly like moving all of our horse-drawn vehicle carriages down there, but I won't go into that now. Can I thank officers again for all of the work on this? Of course, the City of Melbourne is in partnership with the state government, with MPA, with other agencies to co-work on this. However, what we're doing tonight is making a City of Melbourne submission as a council to contribute to this debate, and I am grateful to officers for providing councillors with multiple opportunities to feed into this. Some of the ideas even from councillors have made it through to the final submission, and that's a good thing to see every now and then. The point has been made by Chris already that Westgate Park has the potential to be a great inner city park one day, and it should have that biodiversity and green corridor throughout Fisherman's Bend. I think that's a wonderful thing. The public transport links has also been mentioned. I think that this vision squibs that issue a little bit. We need to actually bite the bullet and say where those links are going to be, and how and what time and under what timing those links are going to be delivered, whether we're talking about heavy rail, light rail or other public transport links. Now, not after this vision is adopted, is the time for the government to get real about what they're going to do and when and why. But finally, and this is the elephant in the room for me, the vision talks about the five different precincts and what land uses are going to be there. This backcasting vision saying what each individual precinct is going to look like in however many years' time, saying you're going to have artist studios over here and you're going to have only employment over here and you're going to have certain types of residential apartments over here and other types over there, light industry here. None of that is going to be achieved with the capital city zone applying across the entire area and no other planning controls in place to direct land uses below what is a very, very free, as of right, zone which allows pretty much most inner city land uses as of right. So there's a lot of good stuff in here, but again, unless the state government actually commits to a plan up front to explain exactly how it's going to guide these land uses in those certain precincts, well then all of those nice words for each precinct are just that, they're nice words. So I have major, major concerns about the vision for that reason. It has the potential to be a wonderful, wonderful urban renewal area, and I'm sure it can be, but the thing that's missing right now, even more so than the public transport links or the biodiversity plan in Westgate Park, is a plan from government up front which explains how it's going to direct those land uses if that's what it really wants. That's my personal opinion anyway. Councillor Oak.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. I agree. Great submission from officers. I think it does capture our vision for the whole municipality, and you can see, I think it's really, you know, it's an amazing audit of all of our policies in the submission and how these need to be, or our vision is to see them addressed down at Fisherman's Bend, and it covers everything from arts to food policy to transport to open space to inclusive, our inclusive policies. So I think that is a great example of a huge amount of work that we've already done to try and, you know, to make the City of Melbourne a great city, and we need to ensure that they're transferred to a new area for our municipality. It's incredibly important, just following on from Councillor Leppard, that if we're going to actually have a city for people, and we need to actually invest in schools and parks and recreation and community services, and they need to be done upfront. They can't be done after the effect. We've seen that happen already in our term, in Docklands in particular, and we can't see that happen again. So I think that the officers are correct in saying that it needs to be applied not only through the planning scheme but also through strategic investment, and we can't underestimate that. We can't underestimate that at all. So absolutely support other key elements in the vision around the Green Star community, the active transport, actually getting where these transport connections are going to be. If it's going to be a connection to the city, it can't be a connection of the city that requires half an hour to get there. It needs to be a connection to the city that is obvious and easy, and the best way that you can get there through active transport, not through cars, obviously. And finally, incorporating into this document, as we are starting to do so more so, I think particularly through your guidance, Kate, the incorporation of Indigenous heritage and caring for country principles. I think that's incredibly important, not just in the Westgate Park area and biodiversity connections, but in how we realise the buildings and the community spaces down there. So I particularly like that that's included in the submission.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Any other contributors to this debate? Councillor Mayne.
I'd also like to commend officers. I think it's an excellent submission. The history of Fisherman's Bends is quite chaotic. The previous planning minister's decision to rezone to capital city was certainly putting the cart before the horse, and has made the whole process very difficult ever since. Personal view is that we should have been doing E-gate ahead of Fisherman's Bend, and the sequencing of the rollout of the urban infill hasn't been right. But we are where we are, and we just have to manage through now. I agree we need to be more clear about the transport links, and Yarra's Edge residents mightn't like it, but I think it should be a priority of the tram over the boats in terms of that key bridge near Yarra's Edge to open it up. Also the question of who funds all of that sort of schools and infrastructure and open space, and there are proposals for some solid developer contribution regimes, but it is still unclear if, you know, who's going to write the checks for hundreds of millions of dollars to really deliver the public benefit and infrastructure that's needed to really fulfil the vision for Fisherman's Bend. So I'm not absolutely sure where we'll be in 5 years with Fisherman's Bend, given some of these uncertainties, but this is certainly, we're getting in the right direction, having got off to a very chaotic start in terms of embracing this region as an urban infill zone.
Any other councillors wish to contribute to the debate? Lord Mayor.
I'm not sure I agree with chaotic start, given that we at the city did have considerable input into that original plan, but nevertheless. Fisherman's Bend is going to be very important to us, because really the only instrument around developing Fisherman's Bend, given that it's private land, is land use planning. And that's in our control. And therefore, we are going to be one of the key players in how Fisherman's Bend plays out. So from our perspective at the city, we need to have a long game here. This doesn't have to be done within 5 years or even 10 years. This can be a 30, 40-year project to make sure we get it right. I usually agree with Councillor Mayne, and I do tonight, right up till the tram. I don't believe it should divide the community at Yarra's Edge. I believe, yes, we do need public transport into it, but let's look at whether we can push that that tram further westwards, away from Yarra Edge, and down away from the project a bit, to still get the public transport link but not divide the community that's there at Yarra Edge. And I believe that there are options there that would make that possible.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Wood, were you indicating you wish to speak? No? Councillor Pinder-Mortimer?
I just want to say it's a great recast vision, and it is simply the start of the conversation for young families to all the way through to innovative businesses. But I just want to look at a key aspect, which is affordable housing, and urge that it is looked at through the lens of the community rather than developers and or officers only. Because I think heart needs to be brought into this, and some effective policies are required. So we do show more caring for those who are disadvantaged, and really look at affordable housing in a different context.
Thank you, Councillor Pinder-Mortimer. Any other contributors? No, in that case I'll put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. We will now move on to agenda item 6.3, Melbourne Metro Rail Project, City of Melbourne submission to the Environmental Effects Statement. Would councillors like a presentation on this matter? No. In that case, I call on Matt Hammond, resident of Kensington, I beg your pardon, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. Thanks, Matt. You've got 3 minutes.
Thank you very much, Lord Mayor and councillors. I'm here with Adam Murchie tonight. We're both South Kensington residents, and we represent a group of about 30 residents in the South Kensington station proximity. And on their behalf, we've provided a copy to council of our submission, which is in support of the alternative design for the Western Portal. Firstly, we'd like to congratulate Rob Moore on his team for their submission. We think there's very good work being done. And thanks to Councillor Leppett for giving us the opportunity to feed into that. I did find one very small error on the bottom of page 38, where when they list the affected properties, he failed to list mine at 133 Ormond Street. But that's OK. I'm sure it'll get picked up in the final draft. Look, and our position in support of the Kensington Associates in support of the alternative design is backed by a number of other groups in the area. It's certainly backed by the Kensington Association, the Kensington Flemington Junior Sports Club, the KCCC and other community groups. We just want to make it plain that we support Metro, but we're very keen to minimise the impacts on the area. There is a very strong resident view that in terms of direct benefit, there is very little direct benefit in Kensington, but there is certainly going to be a significant amount of pain through the construction process. We're prepared to put up with that. We think that's it's always going to happen with a process like this, but we want to make sure that the design option that is endorsed is not the cheapest and the laziest, but in fact it is the best option for Kensington. In terms of my perspective and why I'm so passionate, I've lived in Kensington for 25 years. I've lived in my current place of residence for 20 years. It's where we've raised our children. We're very much enmeshed in the community, very much involved in junior sport, in community activism. Our kids go to the school in the area and all that type of stuff. And we would be quite distraught if we were forced out of the area for needless reasons. I'd just like to say that we would certainly encourage council to push as hard as they can in terms of support of the alternative option. As a group of residents, we've worked very, very hard with the MMRA over the last 6 months to actually get that put up into the EES, and we're very, very keen to ensure that that is the preferred option for our part of the world. So thank you very much for your time, councillors. That's all I'd like to say.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr Hammond? No? We'll move on then to Adam Murchie, resident of Kensington as well. Adam, you've got 3 minutes.
Thanks, councillors, for the chance to talk. And again, I'd like to congratulate you on what's a very good submission and also reiterate thanks to Rob Moore, who's been really great, quite fantastic for the local residents. Covering off from what Matt says, really South Kensington, where we bear a lot of the brunt but no direct access or benefit to the actual project. Notwithstanding, we don't want to stand in the way of progress, but that progress has to be informed in the context of broader community. I've lived in Kensington in a significant period of time. Given the context of your heritage discussion before, I have literally just finished a 2.5 year meticulous heritage refurbishment of a house there. The whole design around that was giving back to the community, and now we're faced with a tunnel on our doorstep, the loss of heritage homes. Like Matt, I'm quite significant within the local community, particularly I have a young family and we're engaged with a number of other young families in the area. A major concern is the rerouting of traffic, heavy vehicles, but I think an area that's been understated is the impact of the commuter traffic that currently goes via Lloyd Street to access the CBD. That traffic will become a load on the local residential streets, and that hasn't really showed in many submissions. Obviously another access issue is the station. Under the concept option, the cut and cover tunnel basically eliminates station access as it exists, and there's temporary access. That's an issue for young families, elderly and the disabled, which is a significant issue. Another aspect that's also been lost in the broader concept option is the fact that the Sunbury line has a significant period of closure. It's already bad trying to obtain a train service from South Kensington. That will only worsen as the load on the service is intensified from lines or stations further up the line originating from Sunbury and elsewhere. The imposition of a substation, which seemed to get lost in translation until the EES, is just something I can't fathom. Why it needs to be there is totally unreasonable in the context of all the government-owned land around Arden that can be utilised. In the context of a heritage area, it just seems completely out of place, certainly being as close as it is to residential dwellings. The MMRA, to their credit, engaged with us quite heavily and showed us what the landscape and the amenity treatments would look like with the two options. It's just... the concept option just does not stack up on any measure, whether it be the legacy it leaves for the community, the accessibility for the community, the landscaping, the loss of houses. On that basis, we really encourage council to push heavily in terms of the alternative option. We recognise we're going to bear a significant brunt of destabilisation as a local group for a period of time, but we're willing to live with that as long as there's a legacy option that actually supports the community desires. We are steadfast in our view view that we can live with the alternative option, and we encourage council to support the local community and really get on board and help push that home with the authority. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Adam. Are there any questions for Adam? No, in that case, I move the motion and call on a seconder. Lord Mayor. Sorry. Look, can I just start at the most important place to start, and that is to say that this is probably one of the most significant pieces of work that Council has done on a project that isn't theirs. That is down to Rob and his team. The amount of detail, no stone unturned, Rob and Karen have really done a remarkable job in putting together this enormous document, and they've thought of everything. Every page you turn, there's another 10 things that you think you could never think of, and this document has just put together the most remarkable suite of suggestions, if you like, to the state government for improvements to the Metro project, as well as, of course, positions that set out the City of Melbourne's support or opposition to some of the aspects of the project. Overall, though, we should also reiterate that the Metro project has long been something that the City of Melbourne has advocated for. It is City of Melbourne policy that this project in this form, at this route, should be built. And any EES process is always going to be a process of finding out what can be improved upon. And so the perception that this report is just a list of things that we're finding that are wrong with the submission, which might be an inevitable way that some media might have to report it, that's perfectly natural, of course, may sometimes miss the broader point that the Metro project is going to be absolutely vital to the city's future, and this council supports it wholeheartedly. So thank you to Rob and Karen for all the work on this. The two submissions as well were fantastic. I won't only talk about Kensington, of course, that's just the Western Portal, but I think the case has been absolutely made that the alternative design for the Western Portal is the one that we should be advocating for. The case is made incredibly strongly in the report before us today, and some of those reasons have been fleshed out as well in the two fantastic submissions we've had. Not only are there fewer property acquisitions, but the station can have its access continued, which is very important for that local community, especially people who have access issues. Years and years and years of council trying to make that area of Kensington, which is surrounded by state-owned land and industrial uses, as livable as possible by getting the trucks off the street, this, that and the other thing. We can keep that intact if we go with the alternative Western Portal option rather than option one, which is in the report. The report doesn't really say which option the state government's leaning towards. I'm hoping that with the advocacy of the City of Melbourne and the sheer strength of those submissions from the community, and they are strong, obviously, we can go with that alternative option. The other concerns, of course, are serious. With any project of this size, we do need to take these concerns seriously. The quantity of trees that are likely to be lost is something that is very concerning, and the MMRA has said to us, and we've said back to them, that we must assess the value of each and every tree and make sure that every single tree has got a plan in place and that every option has been looked at to make sure that trees can be retained where possible. That's all we can ask for. That's all we can do. I think we're going in the right direction there. There are countless heritage concerns which I won't go into here, but I think that they can be addressed, as has been set out in the report, as can some of the other social displacement issues, but I might leave it there for now. Lord Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor. Again, I'd echo the great work done by Rob Moore and his team, and I agree with you. This is not that we're cavilling at the project in any way, but this is the process through which we can raise issues that need to be ventilated during the EES process. Already a great result that there's no tunnel boring machine being launched in Fawkner Park, and I think that's a very important commitment that they've made. But again, report from our officers raises a number of issues that do need to be brought to the fore and answered during the EES process. Noise and vibration, the tunnel alignment below the domain precinct, and we have a preference there. The Councillor Leppert mentioned the trees. I think there are 475 that are affected in the City of Melbourne. Okay, about half of them are either juvenile or end of life, and we would have, you know, we can replace the one and we would have needed to replace the other, but nevertheless, it is almost a tree by tree negotiation. the disruption planning, including things like City Square, the timing elements of the project and the landmarks that we have to meet, the things that are important to us, not just the City Square but the Melbourne Visitor Centre, that truck movements are managed according to just-in-time construction rather than having banks of trucks in, you know, Exhibition Street or Russell Street or Swanson Street, very important to us. We don't agree with some of the proposed treatments in Franklin, Beckett or Grattan Streets, and that needs to be addressed. Our two submitters have talked about the Western Portal. Can I assure you we absolutely support your position around the Western Portal, and we'll be making that argument extremely strongly. We think it's, to be honest, a no-brainer in terms of effect for the project versus adverse effect on the precinct, and we'll be making that case very strongly. The two final points I'd make is one of the reasons that we are so involved in this is that this touches something like 26 different policy documents or strategies of the City of Melbourne. So it reaches into all of our business. It won't be business as usual, we know that, but that's why we're paying such attention to it. And the final point I would make is that one can only hope in future discussions, for instance around the Western Distributor, that the responsible authority there dealing with us deals with us with the same clarity and transparency and openness to suggestion that the MMRA has done with us so far. And I want to pay tribute also to Evan Tattersall and his team. They have been remarkably cooperative with the city. We may have a bit of headbutting in the future, but so far so good.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other councillors wish to contribute? Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Chair. I agree with you. I think the report was excellent. To Rob, you're getting lots of congratulations, but it's well deserved to you and your team for the extensive amount of work that you've put in. I got this report, and we get lots of things to read, and hello. Excellent. I'm back. Solar-powered microphones. I believe I have an exciting life, and I'm actually... I read this from cover to cover as soon as I got it. That's how good the report was. And it's a long, long report, but it covers, as our submitters have said, every aspect of the project, which is a huge project. As Councillor Leppett and the Lord Mayor have said, we wholeheartedly support the project, but we're also about minimising the impact across the city as much as possible, recognising there will be significant impacts. The whole, in terms of city design, all of our urban renewal areas have been designed around these stations for such a long time that when the Melbourne Metro project sort of had a hiccup a few years ago and was taken off the table, that was not just about a transport project, but it was actually about the entire city design as we'd seen it for the last 8 to 10 years. So to have this project back on the table and moving forward so strongly is a really good thing for the city. I agree with the Lord Mayor. I think we've already had a significant win with Faulkner Park. I think that's in no uncertain terms, in no small way, due to the work of Rob Moore and his team. Obviously, Evan and his team with MMRA have been very accommodating, but they're working towards minimising as much as possible the impact of this significant project on the community. And I think both of our submitters, although we can't make any promises, will be pushing as hard as we can on that second option as the only option that we think, after spending all that money on JJ Holland Park and all the other streetscape upgrades, we want to see this project add to the Kensington community as much as possible. One thing I will say too, though, is 38,000 passengers extra in both peaks, that this project is long overdue. It'll allow airport rail, it'll allow Doncaster rail flowing from that Roval rail. This project should have been done probably 10 or 20 years ago, but fantastic to see it on the table and moving forward so solidly at the moment.
Councillor Oak.
It's too easy to say ditto, but I absolutely support and would have made all the exact same points as my colleagues have before me. Melbourne Metro Rail, it's not only in our transport strategy as a key project that we support, but we have countless other resolutions that we've made over my term here. I think that, I don't know, I haven't done an audit, but there's probably about six other resolutions when we've wholeheartedly supported Melbourne Metro and encouraged state governments to get on with it. And it's great that it is is on the table, and it's great that our council officers have been working so well with Melbourne Metro Rail in their preparation for the EES. I think the opportunities that have been identified through not only the construction phase but also the legacy projects, I think they're the great elements of this report, and I know that considerable work has been undertaken by Rob and by Karen with the Melbourne Metro Rail, talking about Grattan Street precinct and what that might be in the future, and what we can learn through the construction process for alternative transport connections, and also in our retail sector as well, making sure that we're looking not only about mitigating or reducing and minimising the effects as far as possible, but using that disruption as an opportunity as well in how we see the city. And I think that's great to see in this project as well, and we'll probably see more of that in the future. I probably don't need to go into too much more, but I obviously thank the work that not only our residence groups have also done in their submissions, but the work that our officers have done in helping them to connect with the Melbourne Metro Rail team in addressing their concerns, and that's also reflected in this document, and hopefully in the final design that advocacy work and that support will be reflected as well.
Any other councillors wish to contribute to the debate? Councillor Mayne.
Just echo everyone else's comments. It's remarkable how quickly and coherently this whole process is going ahead. I remember Evan Tattersall coming in to present to councillors saying he was really pleased with how well it's going. We're having good results with Fawkner Park, with City Square. New first big contract's been let in the last couple of days for $320 million. So I agree it's a great report. Just the one little note of caution I'd put in is that you know, we're not funding this project, and it is, you know, up to $10 billion. So we won't get everything we ask for, and we have to remember that. And, you know, like, if we were funding it, I'm sure we might have a slightly different view on every last ideal outcome. So, but it's great to be supportive, and we just need to be aware that there will be trade-off decisions that come. We won't get everything we want, but so far it's going really well, and look forward to it continuing. And just want to also celebrate the transparency of this. East-West was nothing like this. A Western distributor is, you know, locked up in a box somewhere. We're not seeing much at all. So just the fact that we have been embedded through Robert Moore and his team, and that the state is trusting us, there's a relationship of trust and information sharing, and then there's a really transparent and detailed and high-quality document that we're putting our name to formally put into the process, on top of all the informal interactions that are happening every day with our officers and some of the technical experts. So it's a really encouraging project. It's a key artery through the city. It's the great enabler for the next four or five big important other bolt-on, particularly rail transports, as Councillor Wood mentioned. And so far, it's going really well. So, fingers crossed, we keep it up.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Any other councillors wish to contribute? Councillor Pinder-Mortimer.
I just want to say thanks to the two submitters, very eloquently written and delivered. Well done to Rob and Karen, brilliant report, as Councillor Wood has stated, and the other councillors. I think it also reflects the collegiality that has been built up between MMRA and Rob Moore in particular. As Councillor Main says, there will be we won't win everything. There will be some pluses and minuses, but hopefully the pluses will outweigh the minuses, and an exciting time ahead. Thank you, Rob.
In that case, I think I can move to putting it to vote. I will do that now. I put that motion to vote. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. Moving on to agenda item 6.4, planning permit application TP 2015-906, which is the lot 88 Park Street, South Yarra. Any councillor wish for a presentation on this item? No. In that case, I call on George Nedovich, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. George, you've got 3 minutes. Thank you.
Good evening, Lord Mayor and councillors. I'm the permit applicant and the owner of the property. I've lived in the Domain precinct of South Yarra for much of my life. I previously lived at 78 Turak Road West, South Yarra, with my family, and I currently live on Park Street. My architect, who designed the proposed building, also lived in the Domain precinct for much of his life too. He grew up in a three-storey graded Victorian property on Park Street, South Yarra as well. Prior to submitting the permit application to the council, I met with a number of neighbours to discuss their concerns with them about the proposal and try to address those concerns. After submission of the application, I received 26 objections. I hand-delivered a letter together with the revised proposed plans and the heritage report prepared by Bryce Rayworth to 23 of the 26 objectors. The three who I didn't deliver the letter to, I'd already met with and had email correspondence with about their concerns. Of the 23 who I did hand deliver the letter to, only two of them responded to me. In the letter, I asked all the people I wrote to either call me or send me an email or write to me to discuss their concerns so I could try to address them, but unfortunately only two did. One withdrew her objection and the other one didn't withdraw his objection, but we had a productive discussion, I think. My permit application is supported by the council's planning officer. It's also supported by the council's heritage advisor. It's supported by Bryce Rayworth, an independent heritage advisor who I engaged. I feel that the proposed design of the building is, in my view, it's beautiful, and I think it is respectful to the heritage streetscape, and it's an area that I have a great affinity for. And when I first engaged my architect, I said to him that that was the brief. I wanted a building that would sit comfortably within that heritage streetscape, and I feel it's done that. Clearly some objectors, well, a number of them think it hasn't, but I'm surprised, and I don't know why they didn't wish to engage with me despite my request that they contact me. So in light of it having support from the council's planning officer, the council's heritage advisor, my independent heritage advisor, I would ask that the Future Melbourne Committee support my application. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Ninovich. Are there any questions for the submitter at this point? No? Thank you. You may sit down. I call on Jennifer McDonald to address the committee for no more than 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and Councillors. I'm a resident of nearby Leopold Street. Park Street is one of the great Victorian streets of South Yarra and Melbourne, a wonderful example of Victorian streetscape in the magnificent setting of the Botanic Gardens at one end and Faulkner Park at the other. It is a rows of elegant Victorian terraces, A grade and Ds, but predominantly Bs and Cs, which is a particular feature of this street. The demolition of the Victorian cottage at 88 Park Street has been approved because very little of the original fabric of the building remains. However, number 88 is one of a group of three Victorian cottages designed to complement each other. Above the middle cottage of the three, there is a strong central decorative feature, which together with the adjoining original cottage at number 92 clearly implies there has been a row of three dwellings designed as a trio of the Victorian era. The removal of the one at number 88 makes the arrangement of the other two quite unbalanced. This diminishes the architectural value of the two remaining dwellings and the heritage value of the streetscape. Council Heritage Advice initially believed the preferred option for the site would be a replacement building bearing a direct relationship to the two remaining cottages, but no policy imperative to enforce this. The new building planned for number 88 Park Street is of a bold square and rectangular design with prominent brick columns. It is starkly modern and undecorated in design, connects to popular contemporary design, and appears out of place within the Victorian streetscape on the eastern side of Park Street. This eastern side a streetscape is uniformly historic except for the one modern building of 10 years ago at number 98, which is incidentally more restrained with its sombre grey exterior and sleek vertical elements than the new proposed townhouse. The new building we will have visually dominates the streetscape, and despite some similarities in basic outlines, is totally different in character and style to the Victorian terraces of the street. It draws attention to itself in its stark lines and vertical brick columns, a marked contrast to the curved windows, elegant wrought iron pillars, fine lace work and details of Victorian architecture. I ask the question, how has this bold modern edifice to be built within the heart of the Heritage Overlay Precinct, has it been justified by Heritage Advice? Heritage Advice described Park Street as of a diverse architectural character, which includes modern buildings and so is able to accommodate a temporary infill design. So we have a modern structure which relates to other modern elements in the street, such as the 10-year-old new building nearby, the modern block of flats opposite, and the Boyd apartment towers at the northern end of the street. I would say the new building does refer and relate well to these other modern elements of the landscape, in particular to the vertical elements of the lift towers of the Boyd building, the most unattractive feature of this building. The modern elements in the streetscape, as they increase, speak to each other and draw the eye to their presence and dilute and diminish the heritage character of the street. There is a tipping point where the modern elements begin to compete with the heritage architecture.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thanks so much. Are there any questions for this minute? No. Thank you very much. I call on Mark Annabel, who requested the opportunity to address the committee. Up to 3 minutes. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, councillors, officers and all interested parties. My name is Mark Annabel, owner of number 90 Park Street. We feel very strongly that the council report has not adequately addressed all the objectives concerned, all the 25 remaining objections. There were initially 26, there was only one objection withdrawn. I am here representing the immediate neighbours of the proposed development, number 90 and 92 to the north and number 86 to the south. Now, the owner of number 86 Park Street, who has the most concerns, as I'll go into later, is overseas, so he cannot attend. A few neighbours also expressed that the short notice of the meeting tonight in the school holidays made it difficult for them to attend. As I'm only given 3 minutes, I'll just highlight some of the main issues. I would like to ask the council planner and heritage advisor to justify just how they believe that the proposal is responsive to the next door property in 90 and 92, the two properties to the north. It is my belief that the building looks bulky and visually dominant compared to the structure of number 90 and 92. We are looking at a bulky, oversized building. A more appropriate response would relate to the properties on both sides. In the council report, the urban design had concerns over several issues, and the support was conditional on five issues. The first and very important condition set out for their support is to ensure that the front setback was equal to or greater than the average of the adjoining allotment. This condition was not met. The first floor addition at the rear of the site, abutting the southern boundary and overshadowing number 86 Park Street, Skylight, is non-compliant with Res Code Standards A10, A13 and A15. How can the applicant justify and council support a development that fails to comply with at least three res code standards? There are 25 remaining objections. We urge all councillors to read all the submissions. We hope that you will examine our written submissions thoroughly and not approve this inappropriate development in its current form. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Are there any questions for Mark? No? Thanks, Mark. You can take a seat. I will now move the motion in the form of the recommendation from management, and I call on a seconder. Councillor Wood, is that right? Councillor Wood? Sure. Oh, no, now's a good time. That's fine. Councillor Watts has a question of Kate. Thank you, Kate.
There were two matters raised just now that you may be able to respond to, the setback question and the overshadowing.
Okay. So the first one regarding the setback. The setback is generally consistent with the adjoining properties. The setback is in order of approximately 3.2 metres from Park Street. In regards to the overshadowing, we have required the applicant to match a light court to the property to the south. Not sure if we could get a plan up, but so we're requiring the applicant, and he's agreed to this, to set the building back a metre to reduce the overshadowing to windows to the south.
Thank you. One more question, if I may. Yep. There's also reference to this being a hasty process, is this particular application, I've been absent from council for a couple of weeks, is the process unusual in any way that we...
I think that was in regards to the council meeting invite, is that correct? No, normal? I believe the letters went out in adequate time.
Right. And so, but it is odd, isn't it? We've had so few responses, or the applicant had to his attempts to liaise with the community around him.
Oh, in terms of that? Mm. Well, I guess it's up to the community to respond to the applicant if he's written
no
to them.
No comment to make about that. Yeah. Thank you.
Councillor Foster, got a question?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Sorry, Kate, while you're there, just if I could prevail upon you to just answer to a couple of the comments that Mark made. He's referenced a number of ResCode breaches. Would you mind just responding to those?
Yep. So there's also... It would be helpful if we had some plans... Okay. So the setback that we're requiring, it will reduce the wall height to the building to the south, and so that alleviates two issues in terms of overshadowing and then also visual bulk from the adjoining property to the south. The development does comply with ResCode. Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions for Kate while she's there? No? Fantastic. No, I'm sorry. I'm afraid I can't allow. So are you wishing to make a new submission, actually? Oh, you just couldn't hear. We don't normally take new submissions this late, but we... It's at my discretion, so I'm happy to give someone who hasn't spoken yet a submission time. So, yes, you can have up to 3 minutes. Yes, you'll have to help me. Thank you. Can you just tell us your name, please? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor and councillors. Now, we are ratepayers at the council, and it's a very rare chance for us to actually see the councillors at work. Because there are 25 objections, I don't think this can be rubber stamped. George said that the owner of 38 Park Street tried to present that we have been given consultations. We had a meeting, but we feel that our opinions wasn't taken into account. Now, from the outset, I would like to say that we are not opposing demolition of the building. We are saying that it should be a proper infill. Although the council, I hope that all the councillors will read our submissions, because we are very strong, there's a lot of strong emotions involved. So we hope that, because even though you're not planning officer, planning director or whatever, we are all homeowners. All of us will probably live in the street or even in the South Yarra region. If you can't consciously say that proposed building actually blend in with that stretch of Park Street, it was one of the thrill. And I cannot see it. There's another question, maybe it was not asked of the officers, is how the heritage advisor could change his opinion because it was not documented. Why was he persuaded that suddenly something that he saw in the first submission that it is not appropriate, and then he can be persuaded that it is now okay, when, from our point of view, there was hardly anything that has been changed. So what we urge is for this meeting not to approve this without further examination of our submissions. You can see that there are strong emotions involved, and we are concerned that it is going to be proposed, it's going to be rubber stamp. And that's the only reason why I would like, I wanted this further part time. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we will now move back to the debate, and I'll reiterate that I have moved the motion in the form of the text from the recommendation from management, and I believe Councillor Wood has seconded. That's still fine. Thank you. So this is an application that has generated a lot of interest, and from the outset I need to restate for everyone involved, not so much my colleagues, but for those who have taken time out of their day to be here and have taken time out of their weeks to make submissions on this application, that what we're doing today is not expressing an opinion on whether or not we believe the building is attractive or not. We're not expressing an opinion on whether or not the quantity of objections should cause us to vote a particular way. We need to determine whether or not the work of the delegate who has put together the assessment in the report in front of us is adequate, whether or not that assessment is correct, and whether or not this application does comply with the planning scheme. There are two main issues that have been brought out in this discussion. One's heritage, one's res code. On the heritage matters, as people have heard, although I might lose a few brownie points after I conclude this speech, this is absolutely a focus of mine, and it has been a focus of mine for the entire time I've been on council. I visited the site last week in advance of this meeting, and that was part of another discussion I was having with residents about a few heritage policy review concerns. We had that debate earlier today, but I took the opportunity to visit 88 Park Street as well. The argument that the building should bear some resemblance to the form at number 90 and 92, which used to be the trio of houses, has merit, just not any merit under the planning scheme. The heritage advisor has acknowledged that there is no policy basis upon which we can direct that the new building needs to be of the same scale and complement, if you like, numbers 90 and 92 Park Street. The applicant has chosen to complement, if you like, numbers 86 Park Street, and numbers 84 and 86. I think they're the right numbers. If not, I'm off by two, but I'm sure everyone knows what I mean, the houses to the south. And that is entirely consistent with the scheme. Now, the heritage policy goes on to explain that it is inappropriate to try to replicate past heritage fabric. If the building is going to be demolished, a replacement building should not create any sort of mock heritage or in other ways try to replicate what was there in the past. The policy actually encourages a point of difference with the heritage fabric so that you can see where the heritage building, where the heritage place stops and the non-heritage place starts. That's a paraphrasing of what the relevant part of the heritage policy says. However, that is actually what the heritage policy encourages. At times, that part of the heritage policy can be highly controversial because it can produce outcomes that some residents who live very closely to the area in question find to be, I don't know what word you want to use, you know, just completely out of place or ugly or what have you. There's going to be lots of different opinions on what the final proposal would look like. I'm not going to express that now because it's actually, I think it's inappropriate for me to say what I, you know, whether or not I think it is attractive or not. That's just not what we're doing today. We're assessing whether or not this is complementing the heritage places. It does. Whether or not it complies with the planning scheme in other ways, and it does. So I agree with the final conclusion of the heritage consultant and the assessment of the work of the heritage consultant and the application that's been done in the report, and actually the building that's here very, very neatly complements the two stories of the buildings to the immediate south, and so there is actually no basis upon which we can refuse this application on heritage grounds. That's actually quite clear, I believe. The other issue is res code. There are multiple standards in res code, and the closer you get to the inner city, the higher the density, the more often those standards are not met. That is not grounds for
blocking a proposal as soon as one standard is not met. These are performance-based planning system where we have to assess res code and all the different standards in there and all the other permit triggers that there might be in the assessment. And there are three standards here which have been breached is one word to use it, but have not been complied with absolutely. They're not, you know, way off. The point that has to be made is that this is a two-storey building in a street with one, two and three-storey buildings. The site coverage, the overlooking, the access to daylight and sunlight is absolutely standard for buildings in that area. So again, if we were to seek to refuse on the grounds of compromises of res code, we would find ourselves at VCAT QuickSmart and VCAT would overturn it absolutely straight away. That's not a reason for me for forcing our hands right here and now, but I do have to acknowledge that if this does go to VCAT, I'm pretty certain that VCAT's going to say, look, the application's just fine. This is a market improvement on the earlier plans, and the complementing of the buildings to the south, again, are a market improvement, but this was lodged in October 2015. It has been in the system for a very long period of time. I won't comment on the letters that went out as part of the non-statutory process. That's actually not a matter for us to consider here and now, but for all the reasons I've cited and acknowledging the level of not only emotion but objection, I think that there is only one conclusion here, and that is that we do have to support the application. So I commend the officer and will do so. Councillor Wood.
Thank you, Chair. As usual, very comprehensive. You know, when we sit like this, we look at does the application comply, and it does. I too acknowledge that there is emotion in this, as there always is. You know, the 26 objections, and obviously we've looked at this again. I think the further conditions from our officers go to some of the concerns of objectors. Obviously, not all of those. But when we sit here, we ask the question, does this application comply? And the answer is yes.
Thank you, Councillor. Anyone else like to contribute to this debate? No? In that case, I will put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? I declare that carried unanimously. Thank you, Councillors. We will now move on to agenda item 6.5, which is planning permit application TP 2015 570, which is 121 to 131 Collins Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. In that case, I call on Megan Evans, who requested the opportunity to address the committee, for up to 3 minutes. Thank you, Megan.
I want to say how grateful I am to be here. This is not the first time I've spoken to the planning meeting. It's the second. And I'm so grateful I'm on the other side of it. We are referring in this case to the movement of a jazz club that closed last year. But it's been reopened with a whole new vision and a beautiful new future in Flinders Lane. I'd like to make mention that I've worked with the club for over 23 years. I was central to helping with the design of the new one. And we didn't have a single objection, except originally the landlord, after they realised that it's actually a fabulous investment for them that we're doing as well. Partly, I'd like to be grateful for what happened over about a year and a half ago, because it really woke up what it meant to have Bennett's. But it has a new future now. I'm kind of not sure if you knew, but the place that you had approved last year closed, went to VCAT, went really south. So to a certain degree, the legacy of Bennett's Lane has got, I guess I never want to see a venue close, let's just put that out there. But to a certain degree, that one did, and that we did, but that somebody came and bought us and wants to have a new space for us, kind of shows me that all the things that Bennett's Lane has helped achieve over 20 years, the infrastructure for the Melbourne International Jazz Festival, the fact that we now have better touring circuits for musicians, not just in jazz, but in all other music forms in the city, is really important. So partly to have the future that we have now, if you approve this, I just want to be really grateful for. Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. Any questions? No. I move the motion on the screen and call for a seconder. Councillor Wood, thank you very much. All apologies. Everyone's going to be very keen to support this, I'm sure. Look, it's always a delight to help contribute to the opening of a new live music venue right in the heart of the city. That is just such an exciting thing, and too often the debate is about what happens on the other occasions when buildings are closing or live music venues are closing. I'm delighted to support this. The reason this is before the committee is only because the licence is being sought for after 1 a.m. and so that was the trigger for bringing this towards the committee. However, there are generally no planning concerns that this committee, I believe, is going to quibble with, nor, of course, did the delegate who put the report together. And so I overwhelmingly support it. I think with the track record of a place like Bennett's Lane, gosh, I must nearly have a conflict given how many times I've been to Bennett's Lane, but I think it's okay. I think it's absolutely fair to say that a jazz club, for goodness sakes, with a history of Bennett's Lane is perfectly suitable for an extended licence post 1 a.m. On 2 days a week. I think that's what it is. My iPad's just turned off. And so only too happy to support this. I think I remember the last time you were at the committee, actually. I wasn't a councillor yet, but we had a half-hour discussion about where the sign should go. Is that right? Yes, that's right. Councillor Wood.
Thanks, Chair. Megan, I'm going to make a terrible admission here and say that I don't like jazz. I do come from Mildura, so that's part of my sort of cultured upbringing. But I'm more than happy to support this. Live music is what makes Melbourne great. So I love the design of the building as well. So if this is supported, and I don't think there's going to be any issues, I look forward to venturing to Bennett's Lane to sample some jazz. Thank you very much.
Order. Anyone else like to contribute to this debate, please? Lord Mayor.
Would you like to know where the sign is? The Bennett's Lane sign is in my study. And the reason for that is that Bennett's Lane was named for my great-great-grandfather, who was mayor here in 1861. And so I, too, have been an habitué of Bennett's Lane and look forward to the new venue very much. And I may even be persuaded from time to time for reasonable favours in return to lend you the sign.
It's getting a bit out of control here. Any other councillor like to contribute to the debate?
Well, after that, you can't try that, can you? But I say bring back Bennett's Lane. Fantastic.
I might now put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you very much, councillors. We'll move on to item 6.6, Ministerial Referral TPM 2015-26, which is land at 640 Bourke Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. In that case, I call on Katrina Grant on behalf of MHA, I believe, to address the committee.
Thank you. I'm speaking on behalf of Melbourne Heritage Action. Thank you for this opportunity to present. Melbourne Heritage Action opposes this proposal. We objected to a similar proposal for this site in 2012, and in our view, this version is worse in terms of heritage, not better. This Edwardian red brick warehouse, known as the Eliza Tinsley Building, is a significant building in its own right and in the Bourke Street's streetscape. It sits alongside several other Edwardian buildings from the same period, and the current proposal will see this building reduced to a facade and short lengths of side walls. The facade will no longer relate to the floors inside, which will be wholly removed. It will instead be freestanding, and what was a historical building will become a screen wall. The plans indicate this treatment will be readily apparent from the street when looking through the window, and it will be even more obvious when inside, and when looking down Lang Lane, as the side wall will be virtually freestanding. The proposal also includes the complete demolition of the rear 1902 portion of the building, which is wholly within the Bourke West Heritage Precinct. The notably intact wall of Lang's Lane will be replaced by stone-clad columns and a metal-clad wall, and its heritage character will be largely lost. We agree with the advice of Council's Heritage Advisor that the current proposal essentially uses the building as a remnant artefact rather than a respected and reused building of value. the heritage building will no longer evidently exist as a building because there will be a clear view through the remnant wall to the gutted void within. It will be seen without integrity and only as a husk. A more substantial portion of the front building must be retained, and it must remain intact as a building proper, and preferably include the significant 1925 interior stairs. We also recommend that more of the Lang's Lane wall be retained. Finally, we would note that under the new heritage policies discussed earlier this evening, this building will be classified as significant, not contributory, and that the façadist treatment goes against the stated policy that heritage buildings should be retained in their three-dimensional form, not as two-dimensional façades. Thank you.
Thank you, Katrina. Any questions for Katrina? No. I move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Alderman. Thank you very much. Of course, we're not considering what the likely upgrade or downgrade or regrade of a building is going to be. Many of the C-listed buildings in the City of Melbourne have to go one way or the other under the new nomenclature, but that won't be considered here and now. What I will say about the heritage place, though, is that I agree entirely. Look, if the Minister's going to approve this with this height and this setback and this bulk at the front and the lower end of the building, well, then the heritage place may as well be demolished. I mean, there's no integrity left if this were to go ahead. However, you can still get significant height and significant net floor space out of this site if only that height is built a bit further back from the front of the heritage place. So heritage is just one of the grounds that have been cited here as a reason for us to advocate to the Minister to refuse this application. There are many others, though, and I'm surprised at just how ambitious the applicant is being in the context of all that's going on in the media and in the strategic planning space in the centre of Melbourne at the moment. I think that this is a clear overdevelopment. It is clearly not respecting the development potential of neighbours. The setbacks and the impact on the heritage space in particular are things that the City of Melbourne cannot support, and so that is why I'm happy to support the delegate on this occasion. Lord Mayor.
Unacceptable overdevelopment, it should be refused.
Yes, yeah, a lot faster than me, but I think along the same sentiment. Any other councillors wish to contribute? No, in that case I put the motion to the vote. All those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you, councillors. I move on to item 6.7, planning application TP 2016-53, 22 Whitehart Lane, Melbourne, and 359 to 363 Lonsdale Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation? No. In that case, I call on Stephen Johnson on behalf of the applicant to address the committee. Thank you, Stephen.
Good evening, Honourable Lord Mayor, Deputy, councillors and ladies and gentlemen. My name's Stephen Johnson. I'm the applicant for the proposed venue at Whitehart Lane. I don't know if everyone here is familiar where Whitehart Lane is in the city, but it's a very beautiful, tucked away, lost laneway. And our objective, we've called the project Whitehart, and the namesake of the lane itself, is to breathe a sweet drop of life into that laneway, because at the moment it's a dark, lost world. There's a lot of unsavoury things that take place in the laneway at the moment. There's people defecating, there's drug taking, there's all sorts of dark behaviour, and the plan is to try and bring the space to life. There were a number of complaints about our proposal, which we believe is very innovative, very creative. We're all about trying to create a mini green zone in the middle of Melbourne. There will be music, there will be life in the area, but there have been some complaints about and concerns about the noise and the activities that will take place there. I'm here this evening to say from my heart that we are completely committed and totally intend to operate this venue in a really good way. We will comply with all of the restrictions that are sort of placed upon any permit that we get. We've conformed, we've heard the complaints and concerns of the neighbours, and we have taken those on board and done everything we can to sort of say, look, we can do this together. We want to create a space in the middle of the city. It's a community space. It's a secure space. It'll be a sophisticated space. It's not going to be an overtly noisy space. It's not a rock and roll, grungy, venue. It's about creating a place where people can come and meet, gather and take in the great space. There's wonderful walls on each side of this car park, which is essentially a 300 metre block of dirt in the middle of the city. And the idea is to have some really interesting projections and lots of plant life. We want to grow a big tree there as well in the middle of the car park and create a really beautiful space. So that's our idea. We've been working on this for over a year. We've got a great team of people, and councillors, I give you our commitment. We have a great track record of working the hospitality industry in the city that ranges from Marchetti's Latin to the Adelphi Hotel, and we currently own and operate the Federal Coffee Palace, which is at the old Melbourne GPO. We have a liquor licence there for 400 people. We've never had a complaint, and come and have a coffee sometime. But thank you for your ears. I know it's growing late, so if there are residents here, I'm the owner of the business, and I assure you we will do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I call on Shane Link on behalf of the applicant as the town planning consultant to address the committee. Shane.
Thanks, councillors. As you can see, Stephen's a very passionate client of ours, and it's been hard to curb his enthusiasm at times, but we've been engaged to guide him through the process and to make sure that he's addressing all of the relevant provisions in the planning scheme. The issues associated with this application won't be new to the councillors. It's a tension between a licensed venue and nearby residents, and making sure that we manage those tensions through the provisions that we've discuss with the council officers during the assessment of this application. Can I say from the outset, before we even got to the stage of lodging an application, we got council officers out on site. It is a terrific space for such a venue, but we did acknowledge that there are nearby residents within apartments that front onto Little Bourke Street. We engaged ARIP consultants, acoustic consultants, to undertake some modelling about what sort of noise escape would occur from the venue. They've modelled not just music escape noise, which is obviously controlled by SEPN2, but also used empirical data that relates to patron noise to determine what the noise impact would be on the nearest residential properties. They've undertaken a very conservative assessment. They've assessed the noise at the face of the building, not within the apartments themselves, and have determined through the various recommendations that are conditions that are recommended on the notice of decision to ensure that the noise escape with this venue is not going to create a disturbance to the nearby residents. So we're very confident in terms of the modelling that's been undertaken that we've addressed the residents' concerns in relation to noise escape. The other issue that has been raised through the objections and is common to licensed venues within the city is patron management. There's been a detailed patron management plan prepared by the applicant in consultation with Eric Hopkinson, a liquor licensing consultant. Stephen's right in terms of trying to activate the lane and make that a safe space to address residents' concerns. We've agreed to a condition to close exit out of the venue via White Hart Lane. So the only exit on the nights that the venue's open later than 11 o'clock, which is 12 o'clock on Thursday night, 1 o'clock on Friday and Saturday night, is out onto Lonsdale Street via a dedicated pedestrian access way that exists from Lonsdale Street into the space. So we're very confident that we've approached this in a very professional manner and that the officers have dealt with the residents' concerns through the conditions that are on the recommendation in the officers' report.
Thanks, Shane. Any questions for Shane? No? Can I just ask a quick question of Kate, or is it Evan? Great. One of the letters we've received has suggested that the delegate hasn't considered the upper floors of the Nova apartment, and has suggested that all the way up the Nova apartments, the windows facing the proposed land use here are fully closed and not into habitable rooms or something like that. Is it relevant that those upper apartments have not been considered as part of this delegate report?
Thank you, Councillor Lippitt. Yes, we're aware of that matter that was raised by one of the objectors and nearby residents. In short, it's not that the matter wasn't considered as part of the assessment. It's a rare omission of our officers in the detail of our reports that they've, in this case, focused on where the highest and most probable potential for impact to occur is at the lower levels of the building within White Hart Lane. And I guess that's not captured within the detail of the report, but we did ensure that when looking through the detailed package provided by the applicant, that the entire building was addressed as part of ARIP's assessment and the acoustic assessment. So we're satisfied that the conditions in the report will, if it can be, it has been demonstrated that we'll deal with the lower levels of the building, and that will also address the higher levels of the building as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Evan. I move the motion on the screen. Call for a seconder. Thank you, Councillor. Thank you, Lord Mayor. Look, I think this is another relatively straightforward issue for us. The capital city zone allows many land uses, and it allows, you know, noise up to 11 p.m. to facilitate all of those different land uses in a very busy inner city. What the job of the responsible authority is to do is to make sure that there are conditions in place to limit that noise at certain periods of time. 11 p.m. is the key time here, and make sure that the interaction of those different land uses is as harmonious as possible. I note that all of the commitments made by the applicant, including the exit of patrons onto the main road rather than down through White Hart Lane, have been locked in by way of condition. These are quite stringent conditions, and they keep intact that 11 p.m. Noise limit that we are so keen to protect inside the middle of the city. So on that basis, and I note that we have applied the agent of change principle here to make sure that this venue is the one going out of its way to attenuate sound to make sure that the residential apartments which were there first have their amenity kept intact and to a standard that we absolutely expect it will be, that those very, very many conditions are designed specifically to make sure that that does happen. So I commend the application. There's a lot of work that's gone into here to negotiate and arrive at this position and get to this many conditions. So I very much hope and I trust that these land uses will be harmonious mixes rather than a conflicting mixes. So I commend the motion. Lord Mayor.
Thank you. Just to amplify one point that the mover made, this is a tension we come across a lot. How do we protect existing uses in a city which is changing? And the agent of change, of course, mechanism is the way that we deal with that. It's a two-way street. The onus is on the newcomer. Whether you're a resident or a venue, if you're the newcomer, you have to demonstrate that you're not going to impact on the existing uses that have preceded you. In this case, I want to commend the applicant and their agents. They have done, I think, everything possible to make sure that they have met all of the concerns that would be raised quite properly by existing uses in the area. And therefore, I think this is a great result. They have met those requirements, and we're going to get a wonderful addition to the life of the city. Well done.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Councillor Roke.
I support the recommendation. I'd like to acknowledge all of the work that the applicant has done in devising a new and quite exciting sounding space in the city, acknowledging the tensions that have been raised and going out of your way to make sure that agent of change, that you're going to mitigate that as much as possible. I think that it's an exciting new venue in the city, and Councillor Main and I did a over 2-hour walking tour of the city not that long ago, going through all the little laneways, and I was just amazed by some of the new little venues and restaurants and spaces in the city that are behind the laneways that you don't often see, and they're quite exciting. And this one, whilst you may not like the comparison, but it seems similar-ish to the Section 8. You know, you walk past Section 8 in, you know, near Chinatown. Sorry, no. But I was going to say it doesn't seem that loud, but the meeting place that you described reminded me of when I walk down that lane. I see a lot of people meeting in a place like that. And anyway, it's exciting, and I think the officers have done the great work, and the conditions that are on there, I think, will meet the concerns of residents.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Oates. Anyone else wish to contribute to this debate? Councillor Wood? Oh, I'm going to go slow now, Councillor Wood. In that case, I put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, I declare that carried unanimously, and I hand the chair back to the Lord Mayor to chair the remainder of the meeting.
Thank you. This concludes the reports from management to be considered. There are no items of general business. Any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we provide a period of 15 minutes at the end of each meeting for members of the public to ask us questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds. Would anyone like to ask us a question? In that case, could I thank members of the public, management and staff for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 7:48.